It's time to kick back and grab a beer, because the space cadets are here. Talking about space and the universe, let's all be giant science nerds. We're the space cadets, yeah, we're the space cadets.
And on the 8th episode of Space Cadets, he said, "Let there be light!" And hello, Space Cadets. Welcome back to another episode of the Space Cadets podcast. We've had a little bit of a hiatus as we made our way through the holiday season and everybody getting back into the swing of things at work, but we are back. We are ready to go. We got an exciting lineup. Tonight, we're talking about everyone's favorite photons, light. I'm here with my main man. You heard him a second ago, Mr. Nate. Nate, are you ready to talk about things that we experience every single day, but nobody really gives enough thought to?
Absolutely. So excited to be talking about light. But just one question, Todd. What is light?
Oh, man. Well, before we even get to that, let me ask you this question, Nate. Have you ever been to a club? You ever go fist pumping?
Unfortunately, in my 20s, I'm guilty.
All right. You ever do that while dancing under a black light?
Perhaps.
So I always found black lights fascinating because when you walked under them, everything that you had on you that was white, like a white t-shirt or white sneakers or even your teeth, would just start to glow. But I never kind of knew the reason why. And you just ask, what is light, right? So light is a couple of things, actually. It's a wave, but it's also a particle. It's like the weird thing in our universe that doesn't really fit just one mold. But as part of that, light can be seen, right, in invisible light, the visible spectrum that we see, and everybody knows that as Roy G. Biv's or the color of the rainbow. But there's also wavelengths of light that are invisible to the human eye that we can't see. And some of those things react naturally with natural chemicals or natural elements here on Earth, and a black light's a great example. So a black light's actually just emitting UV light that's invisible to the human eye. That light is being absorbed by phosphors within our clothing. You maybe have seen those episodes where they go through the dirty motels, and some bodily fluids certainly also contain some phosphors. And that phosphor converts that UV light into a visible wavelength that it reflects back to us. So that's a little fun fact to start us off tonight. But what have you heard, Nate, about what light is beyond just the fact that it's a particle and a wave?
Fantastic. Earlier, you mentioned wave-particle duality, and that's the concept in quantum mechanics where every particle or quantum of light can be described as either a particle or a wave. And I think earlier, you, when we were preparing for the show, you were discussing an experiment that was run that first proved that. Can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So what you're talking about is the old double slit experiment, where Thomas Young, back in 1801, wanted to prove that electrons act, or light particles, light photons act as both particles and waves. So what he did is he took two beams of light and he shot them straight through two slits on a piece of paper. And what he found is that the patterns on the other side of that were predictable. You could see where the banding would occur, but you also saw interference and dissonance patterns take place. And so while hard to visualize only listening to someone's voice, what the conclusion was from that experiment is that if it was purely photons, there just would have been even bands of light that appeared on the other side of those slits. But because there was those interference patterns, similar to if you threw a bunch of pebbles into a lake and the waves sort of coalesce against one another, what you have actually observed was a difference in those streaking patterns across the surface behind those slits. So it was deduced from that experiment that light acts weirdly as both a photon or an individual particle, as well as a wave.
Man, that is so cool. And it just goes to show that light is one of the weirdest things about the universe. And the more you read about it and learn about light, the more strange aspects of it come to be known. So Albert Einstein, a guy that maybe a couple of our listeners have heard of, his theory of special relativity is what determined that the laws of physics are the same for all non-accelerating observers. And he also showed that the speed of light within a vacuum is the same no matter at which speed an observer travels. And that's just the tip of the iceberg about how weird that is. So imagine that you were standing still and I was running at 30 miles an hour. and we both pointed a beam of light in the same direction, normally, for normal physics that we're used to in our day-to-day lives, we would expect that you'd add the velocity of the two things together, so 30 miles per hour plus the speed of light, to get a higher speed. But actually, it's not the case. Both the light, whether it was being emitted from standing still or from someone traveling 30 miles per hour, would both be going the same speed, and that's the speed of light. And it just doesn't change. So everything else around light bends and warps, changes, dilates to accommodate light. So for that reason, I think it might be fair to say that the speed of light in a vacuum is sort of like that unchanging yardstick by which all the rest of the universe is measured.
And in fact, Nate, doesn't that really give it its most commonly known name and inclusion in that famous formula by Einstein, where it is E equals mc squared, where the c stands for the constant, which is the speed of light, because of exactly what you just said?
It's like the one formula we can all agree that we can memorize.
But let's take a step back there, right? Because conceptually, I went and saw Neil deGrasse Tyson speak a few weeks ago. It was a wonderful gift from my wife for Christmas. I got to go see him in New Jersey at a show.
Shout out to Cassie.
Shout out to Cassie. Absolutely. And she got me this great gift. We went to go see him, and the talk that he gave was about the unexplained universe, right? And he said something that in that show that actually got quoted on a Star Trek episode, and he was very, very proud of that, which is, the universe owes you no explanation for anything. And so we try and wrap our heads around things like, you know, if the speed of light is, you know, what is it, 1 billion kilometers per hour, and you add 30 miles an hour on top of that for a flashlight, and you both run in the same direction, the example you gave before, that it should make sense that you should add 30 miles per hour to that. But it doesn't. And frankly, we don't know why, other than it would be impossible to observe anything beyond that point. The comprehension of that is just so hard to really digest. I have a very hard time wrapping my brain around this entire concept. More down to earth, do you ever wonder why the visible light spectrum or the visible wavelengths of light are the only ones that we can see, or why we can specifically see those other than they're called that?
Yeah, like why wouldn't we evolve to be able to see other parts of the spectrum?
Well, you had a key word there. Where did most life evolve?
I would say underwater.
That's absolutely right. And it just so happens that the waves of visible light that we can see are the ones that best propagate themselves in water. So every time you look up at a rainbow and you see those colors, you know, you can always think about that it's as if our eyes developed underwater billions and billions of years ago to accommodate the type of light that was passing most freely through the water. Isn't that cool?
Hadn't thought about that. That is pretty cool.
Yeah. I thought that was an interesting little fun fact. But do you know how light's created? Like, how does it come to be?
I mean, if I just had to take a layman's guess, I would say a photon is somehow emitted by another body of matter. But how that all happens, I couldn't tell you.
Well, it's exactly that. It's a little bit like a set of stairs. So if you think about an electron in an atom, right, moving up or down those little rings. So for our listeners, a good way to visualize this would be think of Saturn and all of Saturn's rings, and pretend like Saturn itself is the nucleus of an atom. And floating around in all the rings are the little electrons, so either the moons or just particles or whatever else. And as those little particles move up and out from the center, they emit energy. What's interesting is you can't go half a step up or half a step back. You have to gain enough potential energy and then instantly just burst through and just jut your way into the next ring or the next stage or the next step. And when that happens, you emit a little bit of a burst, a little photon comes out, and that's what light is.
So Todd, is it time for superlatives session?
Yes, Nate, I think that would be fantastic. So I'm gonna kick this over to you. So what we thought would be fun for today's episode is to give some high school style superlatives to our favorite members of the cosmos. And Nate, I'd love for you to hand out those awards.
Okay, first up, we have an award for the farthest source of light, and that is Galaxy Mac S0647-JD. And guess how many billions of light years away from Earth that galaxy, that source of light is?
Ooh, I would say 859 million billion light years away.
Close. 13.3 billion light years from Earth, the farthest galaxy yet known. And it formed just 420 million years after the Big Bang. So when we look at it, when we look at this galaxy across 13.3 billion years, what we're seeing is an infant galaxy. Even though all that time's passed and most likely it's much older now, because the light took so long to travel from there, we're really looking back in time. And we're really seeing what galaxies look like in the earliest stages of formation. So that's very cool. That is the farthest source of light. And next, we're going to do the opposite of the land speed record. We're going to go toward the slowest light. So there's been...
Wait, so Nate, that contradicts what you said, that that light is a constant. So I'm really excited to hear what this is.
Absolutely. And I think at this point, it'd be good to clarify the difference between the speed of light in a vacuum, which is that C that you referenced earlier in E equals MC squared, and then actual light particles in different mediums besides a vacuum, such as liquids and gases. And scientists have been experimenting for many years with those different materials, passing light through them. And there's been sort of a competition to see who could be the slowest. So our second and final superlative is for the slowest light. Who slowed light the most? And the answer is scientists, of course, at the University of Darmstadt in Germany. They stopped light for guess how long?
Oh, man, probably just a small fraction of a second.
It's a decent guess. Decent guess, Todd.
How long did they stop it for?
One whole minute. They stopped,
they
light,
stopped
for one whole minute.
Light for a minute?
Yeah, and not only that, but they stopped it in a crystal, which just goes to show my theory that crystals are the underpinning of all physics, science, life, and the universe. They were able to use a crystal to slow and then stop light for an entire minute.
Wow. That's pretty crazy. I wonder what that crystal would go for. It'd be nice if you could stop it and keep it in there when you sell it to somebody. Bet you that would up the value. Nice
oh,
little extra
that's a good idea. A very interesting idea.
Little extra glimmer.
Yes.
Nate, thank you for those superlatives. You mentioned the farthest distance, and one of the things that scientists always talk about is this object in space is moving away from us, or this object is moving towards us, and they're always able to tell. And you know, that's either used to protect us and say when, you know, an asteroid will come close, or for us to just track things in the night sky. And light plays a really big part of that. Are you familiar with this? Are you familiar with the Doppler effect, as they call it, and why that actually happens?
Is that the thing like where you can hear it auditorily with like an ambulance passing by?
Yep, that's exactly the same effect with sound, as sound also is a wave, right? So it behaves the same way as light would, being that light is part wave. But what's interesting is if you look on a spectrometer, which is how they actually measure light at the visible spectrum, you will notice that blue has a shorter wavelength than red. So that being the case, objects that are moving closer to us, right, we see those wavelengths sort of compress a little bit more, and the object will appear blue. And then objects that are moving away from us will start moving towards the red end of the spectrum because they have longer wavelengths. And so what's really cool about that is like when you think about the concept of people falling into a black hole or objects, doesn't have to just be people. They often say that you see somebody until they cross the event horizon, at which point they start to turn slowly red before they disappear. And that's what you're seeing. The last bit of visible light emitted by that person slowly dissipating as they continue to move in the opposite direction. I always thought that was a pretty cool fact. So, okay, Nate, let's wrap up this episode with just some quick hit facts and some weird things about light that we see every day around us. So here's a fun fact for you. What is photosynthesis?
Light goes into a plant, plant grows.
Exactly. Did you know that if you submitted a plant to only the green spectrum of light, that plant would die?
Didn't know that.
A plant, right? The process of photosynthesis can absorb every other spectrum of visible light except the color green. It only reflects the color green, which is why plants are, as you guessed it, green.
That's awesome, Todd. That actually reminds me of a joke. So a cop pulls over a physicist for running a red light. The physicist tells the cop that from his point of view, the light was green, not red. So the cop gives him a speeding ticket.
That's awesome. Love a little Doppler humor there.
Nerdy little joke for you there.
That's great. I like that, Nate. I like that. All right, two more little fun facts, and then I think we'll wrap up this episode until next time. Nate, do you like Hot Pockets?
I could do without them.
You could do without them. Well, let me ask you this question. Back in college, you know, when we were in our heyday and dietary restrictions really didn't matter, I'm sure we both indulged in quite a bit of Hot Pockets. Couldn't get enough of them, right? So do you think that the amount of Hot Pockets you consumed in college, how do you think that amount compares to the amount of Hot Pockets that the sun could heat up every second?
Twofold, possibly threefold.
Yeah, that's given us a lot of credit, man. And I did love Hot Pockets, but every second the sun could heat up 3,200 billion Hot Pockets.
Damn, that's pretty hungry sun.
That's a crispy, crunchy, tender, flaky crust. If I ever heard one.
What about those cells? The pictures of those cells on the surface of the sun that just came out.
Wasn't that amazing? How big were those?
They were saying that each cell was the size of Texas.
It's just incredible. And the clarity of that too, right? Like you can just imagine in about 10, 15 years, probably less than that, honestly, you know, the type of visuals we're going to get of not just the sun, but everything else in the universe. If you look at a lot of pictures of planets and things that are out there, it's interesting to just note that like a lot of the coloring that you see isn't true to form. Like Pluto, for example, you know, in every picture up until a few years ago was gray, and now after a probe went past it, we can truly see that it's more of a copper color. So a lot of interesting things like that, I think.
Yeah, it's such a good point. I mean, this is why it's so exciting for us as the space cadets, is because we're living through a period of history where science and technology are advancing so quickly that we're getting insights that people couldn't have dreamed about before. And so each one of those cells, when it's not consuming Hot Pockets, is blasting just infinite number of photons towards the Earth and lighting us up on our daily routine. So thank you, son.
You're welcome, father. Nate, you know, you went a few episodes back into space jail. You've gotten yourself since out of space jail, which we're really, really happy about. We thank you for the constant contribution and for being such a big part of the Space Cadets. I'll leave you with a quick joke, Nate. Do photons have any mass?
No.
No, they do not. They are agnostic. All right, Space Cadets, we'll catch you on the next episode. Have a good one. Thank you for listening, and we will talk soon. Space Cadets out.